Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hoge, your host. Glad to have you with us on a very nice Monday here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. Interesting things to talk to you about on the show today. Yes, indeed. And we're going to have, it's a contrast. It's really a nice contrast. In the first 30 minutes, we're going to talk to our friends from the Kansas City Burlesque Festival, the 8th annual Burlesque Festival, by the way. And two of the ladies are here to talk with us about it. In the second half of the show, completely different direction, Keith Weidenkeller from the Jewish Film Festival will be here and tell us about the films they have planned over there. So it's a nice contrast today. If you don't like one, you'll like the other, undoubtedly. And we'll talk about that as the show progresses here on this lovely Monday today. The Burlesque Festival, the 8th annual Burlesque Festival. So it's in its 8th year. One of the founders of the festival, Madame McKay, as we call her, is with us. You are here to talk about your 8th festival.
Yes. I can't believe it's already in our 8th year. I feel like it was just yesterday that we did this in 2010.
Time goes fast.
It does. Which is either good or bad. I don't know.
Which is worse.
And life changes in a lot of ways over those 8 years. That's
for sure.
That's for sure. But the one constant you have going is the festival. Now, you do lots of other things. You've done classic dance. You've been members of modern dance groups, things
yep,
of that
nature. I still do those things, too, which is crazy.
And at some point, you decided you'd also add burlesque to your mix.
Yes. And that was thanks to the Fringe Festival. And so here we are today. So I've been performing and producing burlesque for 10 years now, going into my 11th year. And like we said, festival's in its 8th.
Yeah.
So it's like I have two children, but they're my figurative art children.
That's right. That's right. Ivory Wild is with us as well. I don't know how many years, a relative newcomer, really.
I've been doing burlesque since 2011 with BDU. So, actually, at this point, it feels like I'm still new to it, but I've been around longer than most of the other folks that are doing it. There's not that many of us that go back that far. I've been performing in Kansas City.
Oh, a long time.
Since
seems like
1990.
over 20 years. Probably.
But I started very young.
Oh yeah, she was a child performer, yeah.
But it's been several decades on the boards around town, but it's now been almost 8 years because it was February 2011. I guess that's 7 years ago that I first started with BDU.
Did you discover that you were good at dance and wanted to add this to your repertoire of things?
My original training was in classical ballet. That was what actually got me into theater. Was that Starlight and Theater in the Park and various places that were doing musicals needed legit trained ballet dancers to be part of a dance ensemble. So I kind of got the theater bug, and an injury in high school made it clear that I could not continue to pursue ballet and point work and that kind of thing, going to class six days a week. But theater, that dance is easier, right?
And she can sing.
She has the advantage of being able to sing. She's done musicals in her other life, as we say.
Yeah, that's where Scott and I met Ivory. We were doing Jesus Christ Superstar. It was pretty, it was fun.
So. That things have progressed from there.
Mm-hmm.
They really have. This is the 8th annual Burlesque Festival. What got you brave enough to do the first one?
Well, festivals were popping up and starting all over the U.S. and across the seas. So we thought it would be a really cool thing to offer Kansas City audiences and performers from all around just to show off our city and the amazing history we have here with burlesque. So taking that into account, and then after doing our first Folly show, the burlesque Back into the Folly in 2010, Scott and I went out and started researching festivals as audience members. I went as performer, and we took all of the things that we liked and put it all together and launched our first festival, and had performer friends from all over coming into town and overseas, and so it just has grown and continued, and it's great that we're still continuing it, especially now where there's almost an oversaturation of festivals. I think there's a festival in every city now. So that's just kind of what happened. Just our need. We're a very audience-friendly festival, and we know that many of these acts people would have to travel very far to go see. So bringing them into town is a really fun thing to offer the people of our city.
Business-wise, you know, did you have to negotiate with people to come? I mean, not to get too
right.
business-like, but
yeah, I mean,
it is a business.
It is a business. There's performer contracts, and things need to happen. Just, it's just a labor of love. I feel like I can do it in my sleep now, but, you know, we have to, you know, with bigger name performers who have been around long and established acts and names, it's some negotiation, and there's money,
yeah.
You know, unfortunately. So,
yeah. Yeah, darn it, that money always
comes
in.
That whole money thing, I know.
Well, you have three shows planned and two nights of shows. So Friday the 4th at the Opera House. Some people may not be familiar. That's a new venue. 500 Walnut. There will be a show at 7 p.m. and 9:30 p.m., but two entirely different shows.
Yes, that is correct. So our first show is Spectacularly Burlesque. So I don't know, Ivory, if you want to chat about that show.
So Ivory is part of Spectacular Burlesque?
Yes, I believe I'm actually performing in both shows Friday night, but it'll be two different numbers. The first up at 7, Spectacularly Burlesque, kind of runs the gambit of the various types of acts and extravagant costumes and theatricality and the spectacle, the theatrical nature of burlesque and storytelling and the larger-than-life costumes and personas that will come into the stage on any given night. You kind of don't know what you're going to get from some of these performers because they're not the local people that you always see.
Uh-huh.
It's people who have honed their acts elsewhere, have traveled them around, and you get a new perspective, a different angle, something you might not have seen before.
Are certain things more popular in some cities than they are in this city or just in other cities?
I think there's probably a little bit of a style difference city to city, but performer to performer, it's like any other art form. You're expressing yourself, and so the differences in the individuality and the uniqueness of the soul that's coming through the artistic expression makes each performer different in their own unique way, regardless of where they came from or their background or their training. You'd probably be able to speak to style differences. New Orleans kind of has their style, New York burlesque, Vegas burlesque, some of the bigger, more established burlesque markets.
I would think Las Vegas would be more flashy.
You know, that's what someone would think, but it's really a lot like what we do here. They kind of straddle the line of classic style burlesque, you know, that 50s style, very glamorous, and then also the neo-burlesque. So we've got some friends out there doing the burlesque scene in Vegas, and more people are headed out that way. So I guess I should differentiate. I mean, we think Vegas, we think strip, and only, like, I would say, like, a handful of performers are doing shows there. In fact, one of our past queens, Raquel Reed, just got pulled into a show called Absinthe. And so she is starting her performance career from being in New York City out in Vegas on a city strip show, which is great. Whereas a lot of the shows are also happening off the strip and are self-produced like ourselves. Does that make sense?
Yes, it is. And sometimes people, I think, get confused with burlesque and, as you called it earlier, strip. Two completely different mediums. Would one of you like to address difference as you see it?
Go for it.
Does your burlesque dances essentially tell a story within the dance?
That's always one of my primary goals. I wouldn't necessarily say that about every burlesque number out there, but part of where I approach a number starts with what's the story I'm telling. Even if the story the audience gets from it is different than what I have, because it's movement-based, it's a dance medium, it's open to interpretation. As long as I have a specific story, it touches people and it reaches them in a way. I feel that there's always a concept, there's something that unites the number thematically, that even if it's not a narrative, some get pretty explicit with a political or a social commentary or a narrative in them. And some are a little more generic where there's a feeling, and some are more just about the elegance of it. Versus stripping, traditionally it's not pre-planned or choreographed, and the musical selection isn't carefully chosen. It's just ongoing. And just the level of costuming and planning and rehearsing and working on this 1 3-to-5 minute number that we do for burlesque, I don't think that's common in the stripping
club. So burlesque is the art of the tease. So the keyword in there is art. So you're getting the artistic perspective in our end, versus the club aspect. And if we were on that side of the business, we would be a whole lot richer.
Well, yes. we don't take tips either.
Right.
We charge tickets like any other
theatrical or performance art.
You pay for your tickets at the door. Hopefully you buy a few drinks at the bar and tip your bartender well. But that's the money. We don't take tips as performers. You already bought your ticket. And you trying to slip a dollar in my G-string is not going to get me to be lewd and on top. You know, it's not about the lap dance or the... It's about the performance. And as a performer, I own that performance. None of that audience has any control over what I'm doing.
Well, I guess everybody has their own style. I believe it was a guest you arranged for me to talk to during one of our past shows online. As I recall, that lady was talking about Gypsy Rose Lee and what her performance suggested, and I was really surprised. We said, well, as she was performing, she did her own political commentary, and it could be anything that was going on. But can you imagine her doing her thing, for instance, at the Folly, which is part of the tour.
Right.
And her talking about the latest political goings-on while she was doing that. I just find that such a contrast.
Exactly. It happens. My second ever burlesque performance, I did a monologue, and it was a speak and strip, as you will, we were at Union Station, and it was about the history and all of the censorship back then. And so I talked about the red light and all of the stuff as I removed my clothes. It was very like, pat your head and rub your tummy.
Yes.
It was fun. But that's where burlesque came from, essentially, too. So, as you know.
Burlesque was a whole act. There was comedians. There was dancers. There was a doctor sketch, from what I'm told. There was always a doctor sketch.
This kind of segues into the Folly Show, actually, with the burlesque and variety.
Okay, let's cover the end.
Yeah.
Let's go in order. Friday night.
Sorry, stay in order.
No. Friday night at the Opera House, two shows, The Late Night Strut. At 7?
Nope.
Otherwise, Spectacular Burlesque at 7, and The Late Night Strut would be later at night, of course, at 9:30 p.m. That would be Friday night. Now, Saturday the 5th, at the Folly Theater, the historic Folly Theater, the same place where the burlesque acts performed back in the day, will be a variety extravaganza classic performer competition going on.
Yes, so a really big show. This show is actually styled after our 2010 show, so it's kind of neat to flip that into play this year. The first half of the show, we've got some neo-burlesque acts, so that's the modern style. And the burlesque acts that are going on are three performers. Our Fifi Glitterbomb from here in Kansas City, and then a performer named Serpentina, and she's coming all the way from Ontario, Canada.
Oh, that's a long way.
And both Fifi and Serpentina have very, I mean, they're actually kind of considered nerdlesque, very themed solos that directly mirror a character that people will recognize TV-wise or movie-wise. So that's a great instant audience connection, and these acts are really fabulous. And then Vixen is returning from New York City back to Kansas City, where he started burlesque, and now he is a world performer. So he'll be traveling to Vienna, Austria after our festival, and so we're really lucky to get him. And he does a very interesting kind of straddle the line spin of boylesque and draglesque and just club, and I don't know, it's great. So lots of high energy. And then our variety performers, we have aerialists, we have someone doing aerial chains, which instead of silks, they're chains hanging from the ceiling. A fabulous performer friend of mine from St. Louis will be doing that. Her name is Mega Legs. And then we have fire happening from some LA performers.
I like fire.
Yeah.
You know that
there's
in the past.
There's a few different fire elements happening. So the first act is amazing. And then intermission. And after intermission, you come back to the second act, and we go to our live jazz band, which is A La Mode this year. They will be accompanying our five competitors who will be doing classic style burlesque to live jazz. And we've got judges and then a crowning, and it'll be fabulous.
So, but you're not competing because you're the producer of the festival. That would be a conflict of interest for you to be in the competition.
That would be really silly.
But Ivory, I guess, is in the competition.
I'm actually stage managing the Folly.
Yeah.
So I'll be on stage Friday night at Opera House for 7 and 9:30. But Saturday all day, I'll be in my blacks backstage helping to make sure folks are queued up and the whole day is running smoothly. Because we're going to be there all day making sure the aerial stuff is rigged. They've got a great crew down at the Folly, and we're going to be there all day rehearsing and getting everything set up so that the show runs smooth.
But Ivory's competed before, so you could speak to that.
I have competed before. It was an interesting experience, because for me, acting is my primary thing, and burlesque is a side creative venture, but it's not something I pursue in the professional way, where I'm not seeking out going to other festivals and traveling and investing the time and the expense that takes, because that's what goes into my acting, that energy and focus and money. Because doing it locally is one thing. So it was an interesting experience to see and be in a dressing room with all of these women who were part of this festival circuit, many of whom had competed elsewhere, had been to many other festivals, had costumes that were thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
Right.
That they had specially, you know, shipped halfway across the country, and that it's a lot different than, you know, packing up my totes and crates and things and taking them down the street, that I'm like, wow, you flew halfway across the country with all of your stuff. And
sounds like it's a full-time venture for them.
For some people, it can be. It can be a labor of love, because depending on where you're at, you've got to be pretty high up on that ladder, and it's a pretty narrow peak for the folks that are making money doing it. But like, unfortunately, most of the things in the arts, that's the way it balances out. But
and it depends on your city too, where mm-hmm. you are. So yeah.
Some cities are probably more welcoming.
Well, I mean,
Kansas City, with its jazz and blues heritage and previous burlesque heritage, probably is more open to that.
Exactly. But we aren't a standard tourist city, whereas somewhere like New York, where mm-hmm. you know, Puss in Boots resides and is from here, and you know, Vixen is coming in, they're performing every night. I mean, there's some months where they only have like a couple nights off a week, so they're able to do that and to take a same act and do it over and over and get it under their belt, and then it's ready to go. Whereas in this city, I don't want to say we just don't have the numbers and the constant ebb and flow of people coming in and out and looking for things to do. So we're trying to help keep Kansas City cool, and hopefully people are looking for things to do this weekend.
KCBurlesque.com is one of the places you can go, and there is a number to call, 816-474-4444, and either one of those will get you headed in the right direction. Two performances on Friday, two separate performances. One performance on Saturday, but it's in two acts.
Exactly. So think of big show Saturday and two smaller shows Friday with amazing people in all of the shows.
Yeah. You've named quite a few names. Is there any others you want to name?
Oh, my gosh. Now that's our own spot. Well, we've got Emery Woods from Kansas City. She's also performing. We have Jenny Pierce is coming back to town. She's from Lawrence originally, and now she resides in New York. And she's another performer I've seen as a student, kind of just flourish and grow as a performer and a pinup model. And so she'll be performing in both of the Friday night shows. Trying to think our performers. We've got a couple local for the competition, and then Vera Valentina from St. Louis, and Miss Jenna Beth, and she's from Nashville. And I know I'm like...
Does Jenna Beth have more of a country take to hers?
You know, I haven't seen her perform yet, so I'm really excited. I've seen... She's beautiful pictures online, so you can see them on our website at kcburlesque.com. Lucy Fur. She's from Tulsa. Yeah. And so she's also competing. So we've got it's a really tight, just upper echelon group of competitors this year. There's only five, and we've had as many as 14 before. So it's really going to be like it's so much fun. I don't want to be like, it's neck and neck, but I mean, it's just
neck and neck.
It's okay. Really fun.
Is there somebody who's really outstanding? The New York Yankee of burlesque would be... Is there someone?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, Fifi, probably? I don't know. Or Vic? Probably Vic's in. Yeah, he's the one who's traveling everywhere and like I said, headed off to Vienna, Austria, to headline the Boylesque Festival over there, which is really cool.
And he comes from a classical ballet background, which within our company, that's a pretty common thing. But that's a theme, the more burlesquers I meet, that a lot of the top tier burlesquers who have really successful careers started as ballet dancers with years and years of hardcore ballet training. And that informs the line and the movement, and that naturally you can choreograph and move and have a vision on stage, as well as incorporating the storytelling into the movement and the dance in just a slightly different way than classical ballet does.
Well, sure. Yeah. It's different, but it's similar in some ways.
And I feel with our festival, too, we don't necessarily have those all-star players. We're part of what helps make their name. So we've had several past queens who have now won other titles and are doing other bigger productions. We've had performers here who are on tour with Dita Von Teese. So there's been some really cool things throughout the past 8 years happening. And now those people are the big hitters, the Grand Slam. Yeah. I love baseball.
The big show Saturday night is at the Folly Theater. The show on Friday is at the Opera House. If people aren't familiar with the Opera House, and they might not be, where is it?
Ivory, do you want to?
It is, I believe, 500 Walnut. I didn't just know where it is. It's right off of the streetcar line in the River Market, right across from City Market.
Oh, okay.
They have amazing coffee as well as a full-service bar where they make some amazing cocktails. Marshall is awesome.
Yay, Marshall!
And they also have baked goods. And if you get there for the early show, kitchen will be closed by the time we get to late show. But they also have a full-service grill where they can make you tacos or chicken or all sorts of amazing things.
We typically eat all the food.
We eat all the food. The late night show, we didn't really touch on the late night show.
That's right.
It's the very neo-burlesque, heavy, kind of the dirtier stuff. There's a reason it's the late night show.
Sexier side.
Yeah. It's a little of the grittier side of burlesque for that one.
She just did like a little hip bump and grind under the desk there.
So that's Friday night at the Opera House. Two shows, Spectacular Burlesque, and then the Late Night Strut later on.
Yep, at 9:30.
But two separate shows, so two separate admissions. And then the show on Saturday night, one admission, long show, much more spectacular in length.
One big burlesque show.
Extravaganza,
right.
KCBurlesque.com or the number to call, 816-474-4444. I want to thank you both for coming, telling us all about the 8th annual Kansas City Burlesque Festival. It's happening this weekend. All kinds of exciting things going on in town.
Just check us out at kcburlesque.com.
That's right. Thank you so much for being with us. Madam McKay, one of the producers, and Ivory Wild, a dancer, and in the Kansas City Burlesque Festival, starting and finishing, going on this weekend at the two different locales, Opera House on Friday night, Folly Theater on Saturday night. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
You'll take a brief break. Then when we return, we're going to talk about the Jewish Film Festival, films with a Jewish twist. That all coming up when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoge, your host, so we're going to go from burlesque. Just keep following burlesque.
Yeah.
We're going to go from talking about the Burlesque Festival to the Jewish Film Festival, which I guess actually kicked off yesterday at the White Theater on the campus of the Jewish Community Center.
Keith,
by the way, is the Director of Arts and Culture for the Jewish Community Center and probably the arts department in particular down there.
That's correct. Yeah, I really focus on the performing arts, and we've got a lot of that going on at the Jewish Community Center.
Yeah, you do have a lot going on. It's a spectacular theater, and this time movies are going on in that theater.
That's right, which is especially fun for me. My past life was involved in motion picture exhibitions, so it's fun to be involved in that again, Michael. The festival actually kicked off Saturday. We've got 8 great films picked out this year, and 3 of them are shown already, but we've got 5 more great ones lined up for the next week and a half.
I saw that the Sammy Davis film, will that play again, or has that already passed?
I'm afraid that was last night, and we had a great crowd there last night. Really fine film. Learned all sorts of new things. As you probably would guess, there are many documentaries out there about Sammy Davis Jr., but this one is the most recent, and it's extremely well done. Focuses a lot on his early career, and as many people know, Sammy Davis did convert to Judaism at some point during his career, actually right after his accident. There's a lot of great footage in there that's never been seen before of when he was doing a lot of dancing. And so we had a special treat for everyone. We had Lonnie McFadden come out and do a little tap demo and talk back and Q&A with the crowd for about a half hour afterwards, all at no cost. So that was great.
Yeah, well, here I am asking about a film that's already passed.
Oh, that's okay.
But that was a good choice because he converted to Judaism after that accident happened in which he lost one eye. I don't know if people remember him well, but he was... only had sight in one eye. That's right.
He actually lost his eye in that. It was a kind of a freak car accident. That's why in later pictures you can sometimes see that his eyes don't always seem to be looking in the same direction.
Not to be gruesome, but in one of the books I read about the accident, and remember how cars of that era, how they would have this chrome steering wheel?
That's right.
And his eye... he either hit something or stopped suddenly.
He hit the steering wheel and the column is what they said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately how that happened. Didn't diminish his career at all. It did cause his conversion to Judaism.
Yeah. So I suppose that was a silver lining in a way, I guess.
I guess.
You know, in the film, he talks a lot about artists, how he feels that artists sort of need to have some sort of spirituality or religion, maybe even more so than people in other professions. So it's kind of it's just a small part of the story. The film is done by a Jewish filmmaker, as are all of our films, in the festival, even though they all, they address issues that may be in some ways uniquely relevant to the Jewish community, but they at the same time, they're addressing issues that are universal stories that everyone can love. For instance, our other film yesterday was Fanny's Journey, based on a true story about a group of young French Jewish children who escape Nazi-occupied France into Switzerland, essentially on their own, and it's a true story.
Yeah. Well, rather than my asking about films that have already shown, why don't we talk about films that are yet to come? Are there certain structured nights of the week when films will be featured?
Sure. What we try to do is pick several different times over the course of the next week and a half. The festival actually ends on May 12th. The next film that we've got coming up is coming up this Wednesday, and that's actually a film called Shalom Bollywood, which is it's kind of an untold story about the early days of Bollywood,
India
version of
which is really big.
It's huge, but what many people don't know is at the time, females in India who were either Hindu or Muslim could not be seen on screen. So they couldn't hire Hindu or Muslim women to play their parts. And so most of the female film stars in early Bollywood days were actually Jewish women. And so it's kind of, an untold story, really sort of interesting. And it's a documentary, but a lot of really good stuff in there about the early days of Bollywood and how that evolved over time.
Yeah, so they wouldn't allow women of their faith to do it. Did they not care about the Jewish women?
Well, I think within those faith traditions, it's not allowed for females to be presented, or at least it wasn't at that time. I certainly am not an expert on world religions and can't say whether that's true today or not. In a way, again, it presented sort of a unique opportunity for Jewish women to have employment in a space where that wouldn't have been otherwise possible. So that's a great story. That's coming up Wednesday. And then on Saturday night, this Saturday, we've got a film called Shelter, which is a thriller. It's kind of like I'll call it a female Jewish Jason Bourne kind of film.
Okay.
It's a story of a female Mossad agent who comes back from leave, and her job is, in her words, to babysit a Hezbollah informant who is in hiding in Germany. And there's this whole, you know, intrigue that goes around the people that are after her and the bond that ultimately forms between the two of them, even though they're from vastly different backgrounds. A neat story. This is not a documentary. It's a thriller. It's a spy thriller, and it's a wild ride.
Well, the Mossad, if people don't know, the Israeli version of the CIA.
That's right. That's right. There's a lot of action, and there's a lot of intrigue. There's betrayal. There are, you know, it's very timely. It's obviously set in today's world. So it's a very entertaining film, action packed. It's a film that I think almost anybody could find a way to enjoy. And then we come back the following Wednesday with a film called Riphagen, which is a story about a Nazi spy again in post World War II, World War II, sorry, and in this case again another thriller, a spy thriller, but this is the other perspective, and this guy was notorious for the bad things that he did during the war. We come back with an awesome, heartwarming tale on next Thursday, the 10th of May, which is called Who's Gonna Love Me Now? It's a documentary, and it's about a young Israeli paratrooper, ex-paratrooper, who has to leave his family and his kibbutz when it turns out that he's gay. and is HIV positive. Yeah, he goes to London and finds a second home and family of choice with the London Gay Men's Chorus. And the story is about how he and his family try to reconcile. And I don't want to sort of give away the ending, but it is a great story. We've got a really nice treat that night as well, Michael. We have the small ensemble from the Heartland Men's Chorus, Kansas City's Gay Men's Chorus, is going to come and sing a few songs for the audience. Again, just a nice little extra for folks that buy tickets to the show. And again, that's next Thursday, the 10th. And then we close the festival with our final film called it's called The Wedding Plan, which is a romantic comedy, kind of in the vein of, a lot of the Bridesmaid, you know, that kind of film where it is set in Israel, and it's a Jewish woman who is left at the altar and decides in the next, to go about in the next 90 days methodically planning to get another husband. And it's, again, it's just a fun romantic comedy. Nice way to finish off the festival, and we're having a neat little bridal expo, mini bridal expo before that as well.
Do they go through the same process as here? Do they have the elaborate picking of the dress? I guess they do.
Well, it sure looks that way. I mean, I haven't seen the whole film yet, but the committee loved it, and it sure looks that way based on the trailer and the pictures and things like that. Yeah.
So if you can go in chronological,
it's a big deal.
If you can go in chronological order,
sure.
Unless you didn't learn it that way. Go in chronological order for what's coming up. I saw the next offering would be this Wednesday the 2nd,
right.
And that is the spy thriller.
So this Wednesday the 2nd is Shalom Bollywood.
Oh, Bollywood, that's
right. Uh-huh. And then the following Saturday, May 5th, is Shelter. That's the spy thriller, the Jason Bourne thing. And then we're following that up the following Wednesday with Rip Hagen, The Untouchable. Again, another sort of spy thriller, but set in World War II. And then May 10th, we have Who's Gonna Love Me Now? That's Thursday, May 10th. And then closing the festival next Saturday with The Wedding Plan.
Yeah. You talked about, I'm curious as to how you pick the ones, and you mentioned a committee earlier.
Sure.
So I guess at some point, probably as soon as this festival ends, this committee will meet to consider films for next year.
That's right. So the way that we're structured is we have an all-volunteer committee, and we're always looking for interested people that would like to find out more about it. But they meet many, many times during the course of the year, spend countless hours reviewing films. I think they started with over 40 films that were submitted for the festival, and then the committee watches all of them, and then they come back with recommendations, and we have a lot of really healthy discussion, and then we try to, when we get the list narrowed down to a workable, manageable number, then we start talking about mix and variety and things like that, because what we don't want is to pick 8 films that are all very similar. So there are plenty of good films out there that may not end up in the festival simply because we didn't want, two documentaries about women in filmmaking, or we didn't need two romantic comedies or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they review all the films, and we go through and pick them, and then we reach out to the distributors and try to negotiate the best deal we can to get the licensing fees, which are pretty significant. And that's why what you may already know is that the festival is largely supported by donations. We charge a very nominal ticket price for people to come see the shows, and those ticket prices don't cover the cost of the licensing fees. All the films happen in our own White Theater, Lewis and Shirley White Theater at the J, but our donors help us put the festival on, and that's what really makes it happen.
You have a lot of events connected with things there, and again, I'm talking about something that happened previously, but you had a speaker not too long ago talking about Simon Wiesenthal.
Sure, yeah, we just had a traveling show come in, 4 days of performances. It's a one-man show about Simon Wiesenthal. It's called aptly Wiesenthal. A guy by the name of Tom Dugan wrote it, and he stars in it as well. 90 minutes on stage all by himself, one-man show, amazing production. But yeah, We love to bring in a variety of different things to the J. Michael, so that we've sort of got something for everyone. While the Jewish Community Center was founded on Jewish culture and values and principles, and we like to keep that as part of our identity, we try to provide a variety of entertainment options so that there are things that appeal to all members of the community. The Wiesenthal story, for instance, is obviously a very Jewish story about Simon Wiesenthal, the famous Nazi hunter who spent his entire life essentially hunting down Nazi war criminals once he was rescued from a concentration camp. But the story is a universal story about redemption and forgiveness and justice.
They must be getting pretty old now. There might be some Nazi war criminals still out there, but he caught quite a few of them.
Yeah, it's interesting. In the show, that actually comes up, that several of the people that he's trying to track down end up either dying very soon after he tracks them down or even days beforehand. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the kind of life you must live, of course, they did horrible things. I'm not excusing that. But living, kind of hiding yourself like that
sure
couldn't be an easy life.
No,
and constantly being afraid of being discovered.
Yeah, and in some ways, I think that was part of the justice that Simon Wiesenthal thought he was helping to deliver, was just those people knowing that he was out there looking for them actually was a form of justice, because it kept them, again, always looking over their shoulder. You know, and the films that we've got in the festival as well, you know, some of them address those sort of Holocaust / you know, the World War II Nazi era as well. So we try not to. One of the things we try to do with the festival, as you might imagine, I mean, it would be very easy to do 8 films on the Holocaust. But we try to instead, you know, vary things up and make sure, again, as I said before, there's sort of something for everyone.
Yeah. A nice romantic comedy would lighten things up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a funny story. Again, the parts that I've seen have been pretty amusing. The wedding plan, she's literally left on the altar in her wedding dress, and the groom doesn't show up. And so the series of events that goes from after that point is where she's like basically interviewing potential husbands from that point on. And it's all, again, it's all set in a Jewish and Israeli background, but it's certainly issues that any bride or groom or parents of the bride or groom can probably relate to.
Yeah, well, there's you know, different cultures type films that have been like that, and they're all different, but they're all very similar in some things. You know, how do I recover from this embarrassing, you might even say humiliating thing that happened to me?
It's a couple of people have described the film as sort of a Jewish version of My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
I would think so. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I was so fortunate I got to talk to the leads in that. You know,
oh, really?
I got to talk to both of them.
Great film.
It was
a great film. Hilarious, yeah. So hopefully this film will live up to that description as well.
Yeah, the Bollywood film would be another one that artistic and film-minded people might be interested in. That is a big industry in India. It is said they make more films than we do in the United States.
They do. They do, and they've been doing it for a long time. Bollywood started, again, around the same time that we were starting to make films in Hollywood. I mean, some of these films, when you see the clips, it's as far back as, you know, as the silent film age, almost. And so it's been a thriving industry in India for a long, long time, and I'm sure will continue to be so.
Now, they make a lot of films in Israel as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as I said, all of our films are in some way, shape, or form done by an Israeli filmmaker, whether that's a studio or an actual director. One of the film we actually kicked off the festival with was a film called My Hero Brother, which is a story about a young man who has an older brother who has Down syndrome, mm-hmm. And has drifted away from him in terms of their relationship, and he decides to take his brother on a climb up the Himalayas as a sort of a bonding experience, and several of the other and there are several sibling pairs, all of which have the same situation. They've got one sibling that does not have Down syndrome and the other that does, and so they go on this sort of odyssey. But again, that film is done by it's all in mostly in Hebrew with English subtitles because it's an Israeli film.
Sure. Yeah. Do the audiences respond well to the subtitled films?
They do. I mean, you know, certainly, you know, some of our audience members have trouble hearing, and so I have one of my favorite audience members who prefers the subtitles because then she can certainly hear the films in a way. She can read the mm-hmm. subtitles rather than trying to listen to the dialogue. And obviously, if they're in a different language, that, you know, that sort of makes it necessary. Many of our films do have subtitles, and it can be helpful. It's just like if you go to the Tivoli or something and see one of those films with subtitles. I know that I'm not a big fan of watching a film with subtitles, but what you find and what everyone will tell you is that you notice them as a thing for about a minute or two, and then you just get used to reading them during the course of the film, and you don't realize really that it's an issue at all.
Yeah, your eyes kind of, it's like at the opera, and those are often subtitled as well, but your eyes are used to going down and then up. And
sure.
It's not the problem you would think it would be.
No, not at all. Not at all, and obviously if the film's in a different language, it's sort of important.
Yeah, are all your films for the most part in English? Is that why you pick them?
No. Actually, most of the films are not in English this year. The Sammy Davis film was in English, no subtitles. But for instance, yesterday's film, Fanny's Journey, was actually mostly in French because the kids are French. So it was French with English subtitles. And as I said, The Wedding Plan is mostly in Hebrew with English subtitles. So a lot of films with subtitles this year, but that sort of just goes with the territory.
Did she have a... I don't want to give anything away in the story. Did she have a matchmaker helping her?
There is that element in the story a little bit. Yeah,
different cultures look at that different ways.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, in today's culture, just like in every culture, Israel's no exception. Younger people have different ideas about traditions and how they should be followed and things like that. And that plays into the story as well, sort of the clash in generations and what the bride thinks versus what her parents think ought to be happening and things like that.
Yeah, I've been to Israel. It was such a contrast of things. The old style and the modern as well. Yes, there were dance places. There were rock bands playing at clubs.
Right.
Everything you would expect that would be here was also there.
Yeah, and alongside things that are 3,000 years old.
That's right.
Traditions that are probably even older than that. Yeah, absolutely. I just came back from a staff trip to Israel earlier this year and had the wonderful opportunity to go. And that is absolutely what I identified there, Michael, is that Israel is really a land of contrast.
It really
of
is, yeah.
New and old, of traditional and non-traditional, of diverse. In some ways, but then in other ways, very kind of closed off in some situations. So at one point we were up in the Golan Heights on one of our trips, and we're sitting there overlooking a DMZ between there and Syria, and a very live DMZ. And less than 10 minutes away, we were having lunch at a winery in this beautiful event space. You know, tasting different wines and having wonderful food and fellowships.
You probably went to the same place where they took us. You could see across, and you could see Syria on the other side of the creek.
Absolutely.
And all of that. Mm-hmm. And it was just desert on the Syrian side, but there were a lot of trees that had been planted on the Israeli side, and that's one of the major things they do is plant
trees. Oh, sure. I mean, you see that all over Israel. The Israeli people have spent decades creating really an oasis in the middle of the desert. I mean, and you can see the demarcation line with the border, you know, lush green landscape on one side and desert on the other side.
Sure, and with their recent findings of natural gas mm-hmm. right off the coast.
Right.
And you know, I could never, as we woke up that first morning, we arrived during the night. The blueness of the Mediterranean.
Oh, it's
really
gorgeous.
Blue.
Gorgeous. Tel Aviv is a gorgeous city. Beach. It looks reminds me of Miami Beach in a way.
Very much a beach city.
Yeah.
And they have a good film industry, and you probably get to see a lot of those films, even the ones that you can't do them all at the festival.
No. That. Unfortunately, as I said, we looked at over 40 films this year, and the good thing is because we do this every year at this time of year, and we'll do it again this time of year next year, is that some of the films that didn't make it into this year's festival will probably make it into next year's festival.
The next film is on Wednesday the 2nd, mm-hmm. and the number to call for more information is 913-327-8054. I have two websites. Which one do you prefer? TheJKC.org, and I have KCJFF.org.
Sure. KCJFF.org will take you straight to the correct page. That stands for Kansas City Jewish Film Festival. So KCJFF.org will get you right to the page, and you'll be able to check out the rest of the lineup and get tickets. Tickets are just $12 a piece, and it's a bargain in that theater.
Okay. Thank you very much for being with us. Keith Wiedenkeller.
That's correct.
He is the Director of Arts and Culture for the Jewish Community Center, and one of his predecessors told me one time, you know, you don't have to be Jewish to be a member of the Jewish Community Center.
That's right. You sure don't.
That's right. Film, the festival going on through May the 12th.
That's right.
Thanks so much for being here and telling us about the films that
Thanks
are coming
Thanks for having me back, Michael.
Yeah, the Jazz Insider is coming up next. Yes, indeed. Sam Wiseman will be here. He'll be playing some of the best jazz you'll hear anywhere in town. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3, and in KKFI tradition, the blues then from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoke. We'll see you next time.